Madhupindika Sutta, this discourse appears in Middle and Sayings of Majjhima Nikaya. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was living among the Sakyans near Kapilavattu in the Banyan Park. Then in the early morning, having put on his robes and carrying his robe, an outer robe, he went into Kapilavattu for alms. Having gone for alms in Kapilavattu after the meal, returning from his alms round, he went to the great wood for the day's abiding. Coming into the great wood, he sat down at the root of a bilwa sapling for the day's abiding. Dandamani, that is stick in hand, the Sakyan, out roaming and rambling for exercise, also went to the great wood. Coming into the great wood, he went to where the Blessed One was under the bilwa sapling. On arrival, he exchanged courteous greeting with him. After an exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, he stood on one side. He was standing there. He said to the Blessed One, "What is the contemplative's doctrine? What does he proclaim?" "The sort of doctrine, friend, where one does not keep quarreling with anyone in the cosmos, with its devas, maras and brahmas, with its contemplatives and priests, its royalty and common folk, the sort of doctrine where perceptions no longer obsess the Brahman who remains dissociated from sensual pleasure, free from perplexity, his uncertainty cut away, devoid of craving for becoming and none. Such is my doctrine, such is what I proclaim." When this was said, Dandamani the Sakyan, shaking his head, wagging his tongue, raising his eyebrows so that his forehead was wrinkled in three furrows, left learning on his stick. Well, he wanted to actually have a sort of argument that his nature is going, you know, place to place, and then talk this one, then they can have an argument and sort of thing. But when the Buddha said this one, he doesn't have anything to go by. So he just wrinkled his forehead and went away. Then when it was evening, the Blessed One rose from his seclusion and went to the Banyan Park. On arrival, he sat down on a seat made ready. As he was sitting there, he told the monks what had happened. When this was said, a certain monk said to the Blessed One, "Lord, what sort of doctrine is it where one does not keep quarreling with anyone in the cosmos, with its devas, maras and brahmas, with its contemplatives and priests, its royalty and common folk, where perceptions no longer obsess the Brahman who remains dissociated from sensual pleasures, free from perplexity, is uncertainly cut away, devoid of craving for becoming and none?" If monk, with regard to the cause where the perceptions and categories of complication assails a person, there is nothing there to relish, welcome or remain fastened to, then that is the end of the obsession of passion, the obsession of resistance, the obsessions of views, the obsessions of uncertainty, the obsessions of conceit, the obsessions of passion for becoming, and the obsessions of ignorance. This is the end of taking up rods and bladed weapons, of arguments, quarrels, disputes, accusations, divisive tale-bearing, false speech. That is where these evil, unskilled things cease without remaining. That is what Blessed One said. Having said it, the one well-gone got up from his seat and went into his dwelling. So over here you can see that what Buddha is saying here, that in regard to the cause where that we get the perceptions and category for complication is called Papancha Sanya Sankha in Pali. So Sanya is that perceptions. Perception that we perceive things like this red, blue and so on. And most importantly, we perceive our feeling, that I feel pleasure, I feel displeasure. So it is also perceived that way. And there are these sort of perceptions about certain things. So whatever the cause that lead to my perception and my thinking, all those things, if I give up the craving, that is, if I'm not seeking delight for the cause of that, whatever thing that creating this thing, and if I do not welcome them, if I do not remain holding to them, then one would not get the seven kinds of problems. The seven kind of is called Sanyojana. That is this, there is this first one is Raga, Raga Anusaya. That is this obsessions of passion in English. That, you know, that when you have a pleasurable feeling, there is this tendency to attachment lies latent in the pleasurable feeling. So that means that I want it. So that one is coming up. So then if the two people want the same thing, then there will be quarrel, fighting, or all those things are happening. And again, regarding the displeasure feeling, there is this tendency to aversion. So the anger springs up. So then again, fights and all those things will continue. Then that's the second one. And then third one is that ditti answer, that is obsessions of views. You see that if I perceive something as pleasure, as soon as I perceive that one as pleasure, or that particular thing is always actually lead to suffering. Since I do not understand that this lead to suffering, I go into sort of perceptions that this is mine. I hold in my mind, this is mine. Now you can see this one is sort of happening with, if you say that some sort of a, let's take a food as an example. Now there is this tasty food. One might sort of take that food, taste it, and then there is this feeling with that one. Now since we feel it, we feel happy, then there is this volition about that thing as well. That is that I make my mind in a certain way about that one, and this is good, this I want, and I remain holding to that. And then so the next day also I want it. So you can see that I have made something permanent in my mind about that food. So that food, if you have to leave that food for a long time, it will, you know, get bad, dirty, you know, that spoil and all those things. But the food that I made in my mind, it never get distorted. That is the good one. I'm actually keeping in mind that food is tasty, and nothing is happening to that one, because I'm now holding something permanently. You see that this particular point? So you can see
the food in your mind is the volitional formation?
Or? Yes. Yes, because you got the volition, because of you feel that one and you pursue that this is good. Now I'm holding something, the permanent, nice, good thing.
So if I have a picture in my mind of what the food looks like, or a picture of what it tastes,
it's not
like,
the
is
picture.
It the formational?
No, it's not the picture. It's the view that you got out of that. That view is actually has got many things. Well, you have the first, the perception about it. Then you have the thought about it. And then you have the view about it. View is too strong and you are not letting it go. You are holding that particular food. Well, this is good. This is nice. This is good. This is mine. As well. So you are, what you are doing is making a self over here. Yourself. Regarding that food. The actual food that you see, well, it's, you know, sometimes going through, flush down the toilet and, you know, that become dirty and all those things, and you put in the bin sort of thing. This is the same thing happening regarding the other beings. The, your loved ones or whatever thing it is. So having perceived it, you hold it in the mind that this is pleasurable, this is mind. And there is this permanency within ourselves, whatever thing I constructed. Because it is I who constructed it. It is my volitional formation. Therefore, I am holding to it. So there is a permanency view here. There is a self belonging to me sort of view. So there are four things, four wrong views over here. Regarding the food, there was this, you know, the actually, food has the foul nature. We do not see that one. We consider this one as the good one, right? And then there is this pleasure you are talking about. It's actually suffering. And so something is suffering, but we perceive it as pleasure. These two things. Because of these two, then we have the third view that this is mine. I created something in my mind, you know, this is mine, and I'm holding to it. So there is a permanency as well, because it's, this is the one that I construct, that is mine. So those views are there. So that's the next one we are talking about, that is this, we are talking about this raga, that is craving, the passion, and the resistance, and this is the third one, is the view. And then there is this vichikicca, that is about doubts. We doubt about these things as well. So mainly the doubt is about the doubting about the Buddha, the Dhamma teaching, and the order, and whether this is right, this is wrong. So that doubt also arising. And then the there is this conceit or mana, that's so that views actually lead into the mana thing, conceit thing. You know, view actually will become very strong. You are holding that thing for a long time. This is mine. This is mine. Then you are not going to let it go. And so that the various kind of conceit coming up, you know, because I'm holding this thing. And well, I'm rich, you are poor, you know, the comparisons, all those things are coming up. And the most bad ones, you know, the bigger ones are, this is that the conceit I am is also happening over there. Conceit I am. So whatever you constructed, having felt something, is now lead to something called I am, and you are actually clinging to that one, and then there is this conceit. That's a really big one, and only an arahant would get rid of that one. And then there is this the bhava raga, that is that one wants to become, obsessions of passions for becoming. That normally happen is let's say that the food has the same example. So we pursue this one, this food, taste it, I like it, I want it, I remain holding to it. Having done that one, then I have made it as mine as well. And so since I am happy about that situation, then I hold the future, that I actually, I'm happy now. I'm happy about my situation, you know, my job or whatever thing it is, and the money and this, the pleasure and I have. So I want my future to be like that one. So I cling in, I'm holding the future because of that. Whatever thing we have, happiness right now, hold for the future. Now then you hear that, you know, by doing these certain things, that my future will be better if I do these things, you know, that I'll give, and so I'll become rich and all those things as well. So you cling to that one as well. It's called Silabhata Paramasa in Pali. It is that clinging to rituals, virtue and rituals, clinging to that one. But all of a sudden something will happen, and then so this one lead to this bhava thing, and all of a sudden something will happen, and then he's going crazy because of that, you know, I was thinking that life is such and life is beautiful, and then, you know, something collapse. So I'm going to anger as well. So the same path you can see now lead to two different things. One is first having felt the pressure and hold in the future. So that is bhava, the existence. I want to continue. Since when it breaks, I get angry. So that's the thing. And having gone through all these three paths, which lead to the fourth path, and that's the ignorance path, where I would felt that whatever thing I construct is fine and they are permanent. If you take that food as the same example, there is this pleasure. I pursue that pleasure. I'm happy about the pleasure. So I got the corruption of the mind that this is pleasurable rather than suffering. And then I'm making I am, you know, with that thing. And which is a permanent I, because my feeling I consider as a permanent thing. So I got the impermanent nature. So all these, the corruptions, called vipallas in Pali, lead to the ignorance. Because of that one, we have the ignorance, avijja. So we get the fourth, the seventh one. So there are seven things that is actually happening just by seeing something and, you know, how we deal with it.
So with the food example, the I am is, I like this food, is that's wrong too?
It is not only that. It is a part of it. I like food. Food is the one that you led to that I construction. It is not alone that one. Your perceptions, your volition, and your construction. Why would you construct that one without knowing that this is impermanent nature? Not knowing, we construct. So that my craving at that time is the biggest one that make me that I am.
The craving for this food is the...
the feeling. So you get the feeling and you have the craving for the feeling. So that's the one keep on constructing. This is the one you like. This is the one you feel happy, you know. So it keeps coming. So the Buddha said this one and Buddha left. So when Buddha left, this thought occurred to the monks, this brief statement the Blessed One made, after which he went into his dwelling without analyzing the detailed meaning. And so how can we, who can actually analyze the meaning of this one? And then they remember that Venerable Mahakachana is another monk, an arahant, is praised by the teacher and esteemed by his knowledgeable companions in the holy life. He is capable of analyzing the unanalyzed detailed meaning of this brief statement. Suppose we were to go to him and on arrival question him about this matter. So they went to Venerable Mahakachana and then having greeted them, then they asked him. So then Venerable Mahakachana said, friends, it is as if a man needing heartwood, looking for heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, passing over the root of a root and trunk of standing tree, possessing heartwood, were to imagine the heartwood should be sought among the, its branches and leaves. So it is with you who, having bypassed the Blessed One, when you were face to face with him, the teacher, imagine that I should be asked about this matter, for knowing the Blessed One knows, seeing he sees. He is the I, he is knowledge, he is Dhamma, he is Brahma, he is the speaker, the proclaimer, the elucidator of meaning, the giver of the deathless, the lord of the Dhamma, the Tathagata. That was the time when you should have questioned him about this matter. However he answered, that was how you should have remembered it. Every arahant sort of say the same statement. Whenever, if they do not ask the Buddha and come and ask that one, because they have a utter respect for Buddha. Buddha knows these things. It's not the arahant that who knows these things thoroughly. And more you know about Dhamma, you see how vast this Dhamma is. More you know, then you see the Buddha's knowledge to a certain extent, how much it should be. We can't imagine how much Buddha knows about this Dhamma. It is he discovered and, you know, he proclaimed, he is the one who actually explained these things, the meaning of that. So then those monks said, yes, friend Kachana, knowing the Blessed One knows, seeing he sees, he is the I, he is knowledge, he is Dhamma, he is Brahma, he is the speaker, the proclaimer, the elucidator of meaning, the giver of the deathless, the lord of the Dhamma, the Tathagata. That was the time when we should have questions about this matter. However he answered, that was how we should have remembered. But you are praised by the teacher and esteemed by your knowledgeable companions in the holy life. You are capable of analyzing the unanalyzed detailed meaning of this brief statement. Analyze the meaning, Venerable Mahakachana. In that case, my friends, listen and pay close attention. I will speak as you say, friends, the monk responded. Venerable Mahakachana said, concerning the brief statement the Blessed One made, after which he went to dwelling without analyzing the detailed meaning, so he is actually repeating the same statement what Buddha said first. Depending on the I and form, I consciousness arise. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as a requisite condition, the I is feeling. What one feels, one perceives, that is labels in the mind. what one perceives, one thinks about. What one thinks about, one complicates. Based on what a person complicates, the perception and categories of complication assail him, her with regard to past, present, future, cognizable via the eye. So, over here, Venerable Mahakachana explained that there is this I, there is a form. So the I and the form, there is this I consciousness. Meeting of the three, that is I, form, and the I consciousness is called the contact. So depending on the contact, this feeling arises. And then we perceive that feeling. So there is a perception about the feeling that this is pleasure, this is displeasure, this is neither pleasure nor non-pleasurable sort of thing. And
the consciousness happens because we knew about the thing earlier.
No. This is actually is called indriya or faculty.
Yes.
This faculty, it is called a faculty because you do not need to train it. It has been trained into that level. Whatever, when you see, you don't actually have to tell the mind, look at it or see it. It just automatically comes in. So it's a faculty. So this faculty, whenever this eye is contacting with this one, the eye consciousness automatic comes in. Whether you like it or not, it is coming in. Okay. So the ear, sound and ear consciousness automatic comes in with that one. The Buddha said in one occasion, it's like a cow, the skin taken out, cow. Wherever it goes, you know, the creatures nibble at her. If you go underneath the water, even creatures nibble at her because the skin is gone. Like that, this eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind is like that. It's always will get some sort of object, something to this thing.
Here is indriya is with the same meaning as the indriya. That means we call the pancha bala as pancha indriya.
Yes. When that one is, it is not developed like this.
Yeah.
Okay, so Buddha is asking to develop this one. It is developing better than this.
Yeah.
Those ones are going beyond this one. So that if you have the wisdom developed, the faculty of wisdom, for example, when you see something, you don't have to think or anything. Like that eye consciousness arising, that the wisdom arising regarding that one.
Yeah, that is what we have to practice.
Practice and develop.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever the situation.
Yeah.
Get these things develop into an indriya level. Then we don't. That is probably the state where you just call
arahants. Yeah. They have the faculty. The faculty is very well developed. Yeah. So it's coming. Eye consciousness is coming up automatically. Now this eye consciousness is actually not a bad thing. Not a bad thing in the sense, it is not creating a damage for you. The damage comes later. It's about that perception and our thinking about it. You've got the eye consciousness, now one would think about it. Now when you are thinking, you think depending on how we have been seen, perceived before, that's the bad part now happening. So the first one you get the innocent, even according to Abhidhamma, the eye consciousness coming depending on this manodvara, also chakku or eye. Those are sort of neither moral nor immoral. They are plain. There is nothing in that one. After that one, with the mental part is now coming up without perception. There is this feeling and now we perceive in a different way. Imagine that even when you see a cake, piece of cake, it's just a piece of cake. Now if you have not tasted it, let's say there are two people, one is not even eating cakes, the other person is eating cake. The person who does not eat cake, then he just look at it and look some other way around. The person who is eating cake, then he goes with that one, you get the feeling and the perception and all those things, and this may be nice, all those things are come to constructions. So that's the part where the problem is occurring.
So both the people get the eye consciousness, but only one goes beyond that. And
yes, yeah, yeah. He's living with it.
Yeah.
He's actually carrying it, and this is mine, this I am, sort of feeling. So the craving comes into that one as well.
So that makes the power.
Yes, that's the one going in the, you know, one form to a, one to a, another. So here, so one thinks about it. We feel it, we have the contact, therefore we have the feeling and we perceive it, and then one thinks about it. What one thinks about, one complicates it. So that complicates is, I don't know whether it's a proper word over there, complicates means papancha in Pali. Papancha is that the craving and views. Remember that at the beginning I was actually telling regarding the food that how we get the views. So that is one thing. And then in, and instead that in, when you have the pleasure, that there is a feeling, and then I'm actually have this craving for that feeling. So that craving and the view both together is called papancha. And in Pali word is, sorry, Pali word is papancha, the English word over here is so complicates.
It's like when you see something, for an example, if you see a flower on a tree, and then one would look at it, in, at it and then think that if I get this and put in a vase and then put it on this table, it would look like this. And so still the flower is on the
tree. Yes, yes, yes. It is. And on the other hand, that person is actually thinking about it, and then the views is formed, that flower is mine.
Yeah.
Until a bird or someone, and you know, somebody is going to take it, then there is this fight because that is my flower. I saw it first and it is mine. You know, even the children, the small children are fighting.
Yeah, I had the plan with that.
That's right. Yes. It is I said,
If you don't grab the flower and you just look at it and you take a delight in the form of the flower, that's still an attachment to the form of the flower. Isn't it? I like to look at this flower, I like to eat cakes and
when you say I like that I means like there the flower, is something in it.
That means you try to please you.
Yeah. Yeah. So the problem is with that like, then you have the ignorance. You know, you do not know that flower get withered sort of thing. You do not know that because I like this thing, that my, since I like it, I would like to be born in this world to see such a thing as well. So that the craving and all those things, that's the problem.
So if you, like this, if you take the same example, if you have a look at a flower and if you think, oh, that's a beautiful, that's a beautiful flower, as opposed to I like that flower. There are, you get two different.
That's a different thing. Yes, if it is beautiful, it is beautiful. Buddha is not denying that this is beautiful. Yes, it is beautiful, right? But that I like it and all those things is the problem.
Yeah. Otherwise, everyone can see the beauty.
Beauty,
that's
yes.
What some of the that arhats that. Have written this type of I don't know what is it called, like not songs, like some things like that, and said that this is a beautiful environment that I can, looking at that, I can do my meditation better
and all these things. And even for arahants has seen divine beings, and then this is in Sutta Pitaka again, and they have seen they said that so the deity, your color is so bright, so nice, and what is the merit you have done to arrive at that one? They are not clinging to that one, but they are actually telling it. Even Buddha, I think Buddha is the one so respectful for anyone. You see that we know that even the king is going to pass away, die and sort of thing. But Buddha respect very well that this is the king. You know, the great king, you know, and then addressing that way and say that. Even the Baka Brahma, you know, that Baka Brahma had the thought that this is permanent. This is it. This is permanent. He was in the second jhana realm. So Buddha went over there. And when the others are saying that this is great Brahma and so on, Buddha said, yes, yes, he is the great Brahma. He has this power over these 10,000 world systems and so on. That Buddha is just not saying, you are nothing and I am the greatest sort of thing. Buddha respect very well that these are the qualities, these are the things like that. If there is beauty, Buddha said that this is the beauty. That is right, but Buddha knows that impermanent nature of that beauty and all those things. So,
does this apply also to other identity things that people grab onto, like a nationality?
Yes, it is. It is the third path. It is something to do with the volition. You got the sort of a formation, and that I am Australian. You know, I'm a Sri Lankan or something like that. We made it up ourselves. I mean, we are nothing. We are neither Australian nor Sri Lankan. Nothing. We just make it up by being among the sort of a community. We make it up ourselves. And if you were taken and put into a jail, would you say I'm Australian? I'm in the jail. No. Just when you are treated in among the thing, you say that one. And when you pass away, that Australian thing is gone. It's no longer there. You pass away as a, you know, the thing. So we made it up ourselves. And you know, just the stupidity. So we cling to that one. We have this conceit about this thing, and arrogance because of that one. And because of that one, we have the identity wheel. The arrogance lead to the identity wheel as well. So,
when you say I am, is it the identity wheel you're talking about?
Well, that one is actually, I am has got two things in it, not one.
Mm-hmm.
It has got, regarding this body that I have over here, this I could say this is my leg, I would say, right? I wouldn't say that it is your leg, right? So I used to regard this one as my leg, my body, my feeling, my perception, all those things I have make it as mine. With the arrogance, I got this idea that this is my former karma. How do I get this one? This is my former karma.
Mm-hmm.
Without knowing that this is my former karma, I think that I am here with this body and all those things. And I, you know. So that is one thing that is called the I making. And there is something called my making as well. When I see certain things, a base car or a big house or something, you know, that but the external things, I cling to that one. So I make it as my making. It's called appropriation of external objects. Appropriation of external objects lead to my making. This is mine. You know, that we were talking about the flower, you know, on the tree. But that flower over there, I make it as mine. My flower, I put into my vase and all that example that she gave. So we have to hold it as well. So there's my making and I making. They are the together is the one that against this the anatta sanya, or that is that there is no self. So when one would get rid of that not self, one would get rid of this the whole thing about that this, yeah, there is just body nurtured from milk and all those things over here, right? And it is my former karma that comes to, and also that clinging to all the other external things. So there are two things. It's complicated in that sense. So we are just, because of the stupidity, we just make these things and we regard they as permanent, I am. So what one thinks about, one complicates. Based on what a person complicates, the perception and categories of complication assail him or her with regard to past, present and future forms cognizable via the eye. So just to think it again, so there is this eye, there is this form, then the eye consciousness arises, meeting of the three is called contact, and then there is this feeling, I perceive that feeling, and then there is this perception categories that are coming up with it, papancha, that is I have the views that I am making out of it. Whatever the view that I make, normally the biggest one is my making, I making thing. And the craving for those feelings. So those things are happening. Now when this one happens, I'm going to the past, going to the future, going to the present. Everything is now happening with this one. Having perceived something, you compare, you know, having that food example, you know, you got the food over here. This is not like the one that I have tasted before. Or you would compare it, this one is better than what I had. You know, so the fast future, you can see automatically it's happening.
And until you perceive that, there's hardly anything in there, isn't it? Because it's just you see that this is there. That's it. Once you perceive, so you put your ideas into that.
Into it, yes. Yeah. And then you are making it up, you know, your way. And the bad part is that what I make it up, it is permanent. You know, we were actually, when we were walking, we had this discussion. Let's say that a man is passing and a woman is coming up, and so maybe a woman is beautiful, and then this perception is coming about that one. And then let's say that this person is now making up something about that woman, right? Having perceived that one, that woman passing away may have got a cough, and you know all those things, but that the object that made by the mind, it doesn't have any cough or anything. You see, that's the bad part. It is actually, while their reality is there, this one is permanent. That's the biggest problem that one would have. That not seeing this permanent nature, real nature, we will carry forward with that thing.
So you said the contact and the eye consciousness, this is innocent. That when you start to have a feeling, this is the start of it. So the feeling is not innocent and cannot be innocent.
There are two things. There is a feeling in that, the first one as well. When we have the eye consciousness, there is a contact, there is feeling, there is perception. That contact, feeling, perception, those things are sort of innocent things, right? And when you, with that perception and feeling, then the mind start to play up. It starts to think. So when it is thinking, it is making your own perceptions, not real about that object itself.
So the thinking is volitional formation, or not?
No. Thinking is not the volitional formation. Volitional formation is the one that make you think. That one is the one constructing it. So your thinking is completely based on your volitional formation. Your karma, how you have trained your mind before to deal with the same this kind of object.
Just tell, what is the volitional formation in this? So to explain this, you see there's $1,000 on the floor. Okay, you see that. So the consciousness and the contact and everything is there. And then you may pass that $1,000, and all of a sudden you turn and get it because you know how much you can do with this. What is the volitional formation over there?
Well, you're craving. You're craving for
the
that.
Other things.
You see, there are three things in that. So there is this money. Okay, so I am connected with the money. Buddha, for example, not connected with the money, so there is nothing to do with that money.
Yeah.
A dog may pass by, doesn't care about the money, right? So there is nothing volitional formation about the money. Rather than it might like to carry it and throw it away or something, right? Connectedness. The second one is the using it, bhavito. Using. So you are thinking about that, I will use this money, sort of thing, by the second one. Third one is the craving. I'm remaining ajosati. That is, I'm remaining holding to it. The money, what I can do with the money, what I get out of the money, all those things. So there are three parts. Connectedness, using it, and then the craving. The strong craving for that one. So that is the volition. It is formed by that one.
What the difference between them about original formation and the prapancha? It is same sort of thing, or it is even different thing?
Well, prapancha has the volitional formation because of the craving, you do have that one. And because of the volition, you have the views as well. Because of the view, because they are interrelated, so they are very close, very, very close. And I don't think I can actually sort of get an example where it is this one is not leading to the other. Both goes way, because each one of them has got parts of it. Because if you have the volition, then it leads to this I making, and because of that one, there is this, my mind will hold to the perception. Because my mind holds to the perception, then I get the volitional formations over there. So then I get all the views and, you know, the the permanency view and all those things. So then there is this papancha. So because of the volitional, there is this papancha. Because of the papancha, there is volitional. It goes back and forth.
So like this, so like if you go to the first example about the flower, the first contact is basically admiring, right? And from that you develop lots of other things, like I can take it home, put in a vase and make it look pretty and all that stuff. So from the first contact you start developing volitional formation and to make it like yours, but the first contact is not
immediately after the first contact you get another contact. That's what it is.
Yes,
you get the, you have the feeling and you have the perception regarding that one.
Yes.
And then with that consciousness there is mind and matter is coming up.
Yeah.
So that one is now actually constructing all the rest.
Yeah.
Your second contact, second feeling.
Yes.
See, yeah, that one good example here is that when we were walking, then I showed Padmasiri the water, the lake is there in Belkanam. So what do you think about it? And he straight away went to Anuradhapura. So this lake is in Belkanam, is, you know, this one, but given that perceptions, papancha over there, you know, one would actually go into my past, whatever thing I was delighted in, that his past, then that's the thing. So that is mental.
Mm-hmm.
What he saw is that the Belkanam lake, nothing to do with Anuradhapura. So that's the second contact.
Yes. So with the beautiful person, like if, as soon as you see that person, you understand and that person is beautiful. After that, then you try to analyze the eyes, nose, lips and everything, and that's when the volitional formation comes, is it?
Oh, they are pretty fast. They are very, very fast. You are not even thinking eyes and nose and things, right? That is further. As soon as you see, depending on your qualities, what you have been developing and practicing, everything comes.
Yeah.
One snapshot, like a photo.
If you try to analyze it, you could even break the feeling. Like if you analyze the person into the four elements or the 32 different parts of the body.
That's what Buddha wants us to do, yes.
Yeah.
So analysis can break a feeling.
Yeah. But
does that mean that, like, when you develop this control and when you try to understand that something is, you see it and the consciousness arises, sort of you get the feeling and then you control it, and
will
this lead to next birth or the strength, I mean?
Well, there are two things one can do. When you actually see, Buddha asks us to control our faculties. Just look down, do not look. That's what Buddha said. You know, don't go into that one. That's called the controlling of faculties. The next one is the Dhamma. Dhamma is two parts. Controlling of faculties is one, and then the Dhamma is the teaching is the second. So the Eightfold Path is the Dhamma. So you go through the Eightfold Path. So that's, then there you analyze these things. These are four great elements, you know, they are the dirty ones and sort of things. And this is not mine, you know, this is impermanent. You know, that flower over there is impermanent. So all those things should apply. So that's how you should control.
So if you control, and does this, like in our next birth, do we have less sort of strength when we see?
Because now you are training your mind to control. So next birth also, when you see something, you control. So you are out of the misery. Over here, because you are controlling, then you get your eyes untouched now, because you have not seen that person. You haven't seen that flower. You know, then I don't have to think about it or anything like that. No? Whenever you take something into your mind, that's where you have the problem, because then you have to analyze it. Or then you have to actually deal with it, live with it, everything, when you have that thing. But if you don't see, you do not have, if you do not hear, that's it. There's nothing further to do. As soon as we see, if we control it, that's it.
It's actually whether you give attention or not, isn't it?
That's right.
That's what there was, I don't know whether it's that something happened in Anuradhapura a long time ago, that one of the monks that has, when he was he was walking, and there was this woman coming, and then he saw that as a skeleton, no?
Yeah.
He didn't see the woman more than a skeleton.
Yeah, teeth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that someone actually asked that, was there a woman going in this way? So he said, I didn't see a woman. I saw, you know, that teeth or something, you know, because he's contemplating about the hair of the body, nails, teeth, all those things. So whatever thing, teeth. So he's talking about teeth, nothing else. So there, we didn't form anything other than the teeth. So,
Now, Lalita, before we go further, I need to get clarified the things we discussed here. Actually, it's very vital for me to understand the concept here. And the what I understood with this one, and for example, if we have a contact with some object, and what we have is we have previous experience with that particular object, and that comes to play in that particular point. And then with prapancha, we develop another thing with that one, and together, earlier one and this one, and then create particular formation. Is that the
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So what Buddha says in this instance is your previous one is grow bigger. Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. Now, our objective as the people who are following the path is to cut down from there and understand, try to understand true nature of that contact or the object, and then try to get at least out of that earlier situation to get, get lesser impact on us.
That's
and
right.
Then gradually, for example, in this life or next life, we gradually getting down from top to the bottom, and
yes.
that is Nibbana.
Yes. In short, how they explain it, we are going down the form of feelings, not developing any new ones. That's what it is. So whatever the things they had before, they are going down it, you know, remove it, not developing any new ones. Yes.
Mm-hmm. If we allow prapancha to go, it will go up and up.
Yes.
All right. That's very good.
So we are clear now. We are going to the past, future, present, and all those things, and we live with that one. Mm-hmm. So again, depending on the eye and the sounds, ear consciousness, and the same thing repeated. Nose, aroma, tongue and flavor, the body and tactile sensation, the body consciousness arises. Depending on the intellect, that is this the mind and the idea is Dhamma, the intellect consciousness, that mind consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With the contact as a requisite condition, there is feeling. What one feels, what one pursues. What one pursues, one thinks about. What one thinks about, one complicates that prapancha. Based on what a person complicates, the perception and categories of complication assail him or her with regard to past, present and future. Now the beauty part over here, now when there is the eye, when there are forms, when there is eye consciousness, it is possible that one will delineate the delineation of contact. So that is a trace. In other words, one can say, one will recognize the manifestation of sensory impingement. When there is eye, when there is form, when there is eye consciousness, one would manifest, you know, one would recognize the manifestation of a contact, that there was such a contact. So there is a traces of contact. And whenever there is a delineation of a contact, that there is a trace of contact, it is possible that one would delineate a delineation of feelings. So I can actually recall at that time, there was such a feeling at that time. And when there is a delineation of feeling, it is possible that one will delineate a delineation of perception. That I will recognize the manifestation of perception. There was such a perception. This is blue, this is red, this is beautiful. You know, this that sort of color regarding that flower example. When there is a delineation of perception, it is possible that one delineates a delineation of thinking. Because of that perception, I was thinking. Have you got into a sort of situation that when you are actually trying to do something and all of a sudden you are thinking about something else and you know keep on thinking?
very often happen in the meditation.
I'm doing this one, and how did I come over here? Why am I thinking about this one? And you can go back. There was such perception. I heard a noise. With that noise, then I went to similar noises, you know, sort of thing that are familiar to me, like that.
There's one example here that one of our friends who came here, and then she said that she has a problem in meditation. Then when she tries to meditate to her mom, and that's the end of the meditation, and then she's thinking about whether mom has taken the medication properly, and it's ending up somewhere.
Yes, yeah. All those things lead to that. So. And delineation of thinking. When there's a delineation of thinking, it is possible that one will delineation of being assailed by the perception and categories of complications. So that person who is actually mumbling or thinking about that object, probably that object has passed. A person who was in front of you has gone and passed. And you are living with somebody that you have made it up and living that one. So you can say, I'm mumbling and thinking. When you are angry, you can see this one very clearly. You know, that person is gone. Now, this guy is now actually blaming that one, shouting that person and all those things within the inside his mind. And you know, that person even does not know that this person is doing. So, you can actually see these traces, what is happening inside the mind. So, similarly, Venerable Mahakachana said that when there is ear, there is nose, tongue, body and the mind. And these things are actually happening to us, and we can actually trace that these things are happening. And then said, when there is no eye, when there are no forms, when there is no eye consciousness, it is impossible that one will delineate a delineation of contact. If there is no eye, there is no form, there is no eye consciousness, can we trace back any contact? Since we always used to think with the eye, ear, nose, tongue and body, we can't even imagine thinking without it. We always think about this eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, whatever thing we have perceived and sort of thing. There aren't any traces of contact if there is no eye. You see, this one is very, very deep over here. That means if you attain Nibbana, there is no contact. There is no eye, there is no form, there is no eye contact, whatever thing it is. So there is no even traces of that. So that's the end of the story.
But the arahant still these things.
Not arahant. Nibbana. That means passing away after that one. Not while living. So living, that is different. This, they are liberated with that one. So they are not creating this prapancha thing. There are no volitional formation. They just see the sea only. They don't construct that thing that we are talking about. They perceive, they know what it is. They know that they have got rid of this. That's the thing. So they live liberated because their faculties are so mature, so developed. And the wisdom faculty, for example. So it's nothing to do with that object. They don't live with that object. And so when there is no eye, no forms, there are no consciousness. It is impossible that one will delineate the delineation of contact. When there is no delineation of contact, it is impossible that one will delineate a delineation of feeling. So you can't trace back the feeling. There's nothing you can trace back. So there's no papancha either. So similarly, when there's no ear, there's no nose, there's no tongue, there's no body, there's no mind. So there's no intellect consciousness. So one can't trace back any papancha. You know, any of these things that the perception categories of complication. So then Venerable Mahakachana says, so concerning the brief statement the Blessed One made, after which he entered his dwelling, without analyzing the detailed meaning, if with regard to the cause, where the perception and categories of complication assail a person, cause, whatever the cause, that may be the flower or whatever thing it is, there is nothing there to relish, not welcome, not seeking delight in that thing, not welcome it, not remain, hold into it. That flower on the tree, it is just there. I'm not seeking delight in that one. I'm not going to take that flower and, you know, construct whatever the constructions I'm talking about. And do not welcome it. I'm not expressing that this is a beautiful flower, this is nice in my flower vase and all those things. I'm not going to remain holding to it. So that, yeah.
So are we talking about the first contact or the second contact?
Second contact. First contact, you can't do anything. First contact, you can have control your faculties, you know, just go like that one, so that that's gone. This is the second contact that is actually having the problem.
So, but once you develop your wisdom gradually, so the you can somewhat control the second contact.
Yes, it is not.
100% you can control in the sense.
That is what Buddha says.
That yes. Yeah, that's what I said, that you don't have to look outside, look somewhere else, because you can.
No, still you actually have the controlling of faculties, because that once you train to control your faculties, eye, ear, nose, tongue, then you behave that way. You are not actually getting out of it. And so having done that one, they actually abide in the same behavior.
So like controlling of faculties, as you said before, it's twofold. One is you don't allow more things to get in. The second one is when things get in, you just see the
vice attention.
Yeah.
Vice attention. Yeah. So the controlling of faculties won't happen without understanding.
Yes.
You see, it's like this that diabetic person's example. He's like to eat this you know, sugar type thing. So doctor said, you know, dear man, if you eat, keep on eat like that, no, you have to amputate your leg. So now he understand, if I actually don't abide by that one doctor's advice, then I have this problem. So he's now controlling his faculties over that thing. So the, similarly, Buddha said that if you leave your mind, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body unguarded, then this all the covetousness, all those things will happen. All the bad things will happen to you. So therefore, he is actually having seen the suffering. Why that person is actually giving up that eating food sort of thing, the diabetic person, he knows that consequence of that one is my suffering. I'm going to lose my leg. Likewise, if you know that birth is suffering, whatever thing that lead to the birth, we give up. If you know the aging and sickness is suffering, whatever thing that lead to the aging and sickness, we will give up. So that's the controlling of faculties. This is happening with understanding the suffering itself. If it is not suffering, why would you give up? You can grab any beautiful things. Buddha said, if it is okay to, it is okay to cling if there is something permanent. Buddha said it. But there is nothing permanent in the world.
So, for a wise person, person who understands Dharma, does this, does that person have to take medication or sort of like, you know, like, if I do, don't do this, this is going to happen to me, so therefore I have to do this. So do they have to do that?
Medication or meditation?
Medication.
Medication.
If that person has got a heart problem or something,
yeah,
and if that person knows that one day I'm going to die, so why do I have to live long?
You need to take your medication. You need to maintain. Buddha said that one, right? Because this life you have got over here is a very rare chance. Now, while you can live, you live with it, and you do the meditation, and you get out of this one. But if you die with that heart, let's say you end up with hell, what can you do?
So you have to try and keep on living as long as you can.
And do the good things, so that the meaning is all there, you know, that is sabba papasya karma. So you give up all the evil things. You develop the skill state of the mind, and you control your mind. And that is every Buddha's advice, not one Buddha's, every Buddha's advice.
So the unguarded faculties you talk about, that's the same as the cow with no skin? It's the same?
Yes. So that what Buddha is saying, that you can't avoid the contact. Contact is there, right? Whenever you have the eye, I mean, there is a form, there is eye contact is going to happen. So if I don't want the rest to occur, you know, the papancha, that part we are talking about, you know, the feeling and the craving, all those things, the problematic one that's going to happen, then I can control my eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and I can walk accordingly.
You don't think that there's a way that you can go just to towards the meditation without getting into so much heavy control that you can't look at things and, oh, I want this, but I can't have it. Then your mind's in this tension and this fight.
Ah, yes, yes, you know, yes.
And whereas if you just go and you actually improve your mind by through meditation and so on, and then those things you're not interested in them, and you don't want sugary food or the football team, but
yes,
everybody else is obsessed in
it. Yes. Yeah, Buddha is not asking you to give up everything in at once. You need to develop your mind. So you need to develop your mind. So whatever the strongest craving and sort of things, you know, just keep it for a moment. But think about it. You know, think about that particular one, then what is it going to do to you? So that is the arising phenomena and the passing away phenomena of that one. You contemplate, and then you actually see what's the value of that one. I'm struggling this much just to keep that feeling. And what would that feeling do to me?
So is it good to try to observe the craving in yourself when it's strongest? So
of course.
You have the craving now and you try to observe craving.
That is called cittanupassana. You know, it's about the thought, the four foundation of mindfulness meditation we are doing. The next one we are going to do next week, for example, is about that there's this thought where I have the craving. You know, the lustful mind, as lustful mind. You merely understand this is the lustful mind. So one should know. First you should know that it is. And then having known that one, then you can actually go to the... Otherwise you do not know that I have this problem. So you, Buddha want you to be yourself in island, in the sense that you are aware that I have this craving, I have this sort of feeling. Buddha is not asking you to fight it at once. It's a gradual
development. That is also a great thing.
It is the greatest thing. It is the greatest thing. First you should know what it is, and then you know your sickness. Then you know how to deal with it.
Some people even may not know about those things, right?
Yes.
They are unaware.
That's the main thing. So
it's not only some people, because unless you try to develop wisdom through Dhamma, you would know. It's the same as us, wasn't it? We were like that until we knew what is Dhamma and how you can apply to yourself.
Mm.
So you are
more you listen to, better you.
Yeah, you need to listen, and then you need to practice as well in the meditation. You know, in the morning you actually put aside some time and then you meditate about it. Then, you know, there's a bit of a refinement. Don't expect everything to happen at once. It takes years and years, but you will get there one day. So then Venerable Mahakachana said that this is how I understand the detailed meaning. Now, if you wish, having gone to the Blessed One, question him about this matter. However he answers is how you should remember it. You see, he said, this is how I understand the detailed meaning. Now, you should go to the Blessed One and ask him. And whatever way that he explained, that's the way you should. So, don't go by my one. See? So, they were so happy about this one. And then they went to Buddha and explained what happened. And then Buddha said, Mahakachana is wise monks. He is a person of great discernment, great wisdom. If you had asked me about this matter, I too would have answered in the same way he did. That is the meaning of this statement. That is how you should remember it. When this was said, the Venerable Ananda said to the Blessed One, Lord, it is as if a man overcome with hunger, weakness and thirst were to come across to a bowl of honey. Wherever he were to taste it, he would experience the sweet, delectable flavor. In the same way, whenever a monk capable awareness might investigate in the meaning of this Dhamma discourse, with his discernment, he would experience the gratification, he would experience the confidence. What is the name of this Dhamma discourse? Then Ananda, you can remember this Dhamma discourse as the bowl of honey discourse. Honey bowl, Madhupindika. It is?
Yes.
It is actually. You see, whatever way you take, you see the bowl of honey. Why? Because if you take that food example, you actually have that craving and you have the perception and all those things, you can see that your honey bowl was that food at that time. Okay. Now, if you understand this Dhamma, what it explains over here, and then you actually see another honey ball over there, because you see, well, there was this I and this form, then there is this I consciousness. Depending on that thing, I got the contact. Because of that contact, I got the feeling. So because of the feeling, I got this perception, and then these things are actually happening. So this is how all these things are actually, these troubles are happening. So it's another honey ball over there. So whatever way you think, you see it's a honey ball. It's a great discourse. It's Venerable Mahakachana is capable of explaining very high Dhamma in very simple way. And so this, you know, the Petakopadesa and the Nettipakkarana is Kuddaka Nikaya. Said that is Venerable Mahakachana's work. So it is sort of difficult for a beginner, but when you understand, it's full of honey balls, complete honey balls over there. It's there. That's the place I can see in Dhamma where this regarding this four, you know, the nutriments, even this thing I constructed that day and distributed that about this remember that we discussed that agreeable object and how the greed come to arise, agreeable object. There is this contact to be felt as pleasant. See that it's going in the same way. Pleasant feeling. Because of the contact, there is pleasant feeling. And then you approach with joy about that object. And then the lust arises. And then there is sensual desire thinking. Over here also, after this perception, there is this thinking. So that these are the steps over there. And because of that one, there is this arising phenomena, upada sankata, constructed characteristic arising. And then the angry feeling and all those things. Yeah. It is in that book that everything explained in very great detail, but difficult to go through it. But it has explained these things. So Venerable Kachana has done a great job over there to explain this Dhamma.
To take just the English meaning of some of these words and try and reread it is almost impossible. I tried to read, but I couldn't. It couldn't make sense.
It is. It's the English language is not that rich in that sense. Bhikkhu Bodhi, in a Western monk, you know that you got those books as well. He said that this indicates the poorness of the English language and the richness of the Pali language. He was a born English, you know, the person. But he said that it is because the Pali language is so rich in that thing that it can explain well. And certain things cannot be even translated into English properly without losing its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go through by Pali, you understand quite a lot. It's so beautiful in that sense. I'm not a Pali expert, but I can understand certain words. I use the dictionary and sort of thing. And,
Is Sinhala better than English?
Well, it is a bit closer to Pali, but certain ones even can't explain in Sinhala either, without losing that proper meaning. And it is closer than English, but still there are things. So
in Sinhala? Sinhala originated from Pali.
Yes, but still there are issues. There are issues. Yeah. I have heard this, but I have not seen anywhere. I heard that in Buddha's time, someone actually asked to translate into Sanskrit sort of thing, and Buddha said no. But I have not seen it, but so there was something in it. I'm really glad that Buddha said this one in Pali language. Why? Because Pali language is dead now. So no one is writing on that language. So no one can add anything to that.
Mm-hmm.
Existing Dhamma, so it will remain as it is without getting destroyed.
In Pali language, if one word is for that particular meaning, I think like not like that in Sinhala or in English or any other language, one you can explain same thing in different words, and then it would change the meaning of the
according to the context.
Because of that, is the Pali language has one word for one particular thing?
No, I don't think. I'm not an expert on that one. The Mante is. And so I do not know. But Bhikkhu Bodhi commented, he said that when he's translated in this Sankatanga Abhisankaranti, he said that only way I can translate this one is that it construct conditioned feeling as feeling, but it does not actually convey that meaning. But you need to go through English one. You need to sort of have understanding. But the other Dhamma part that you are reading is also again helping you understanding this thing.
And my feeling is it's not so bad that English doesn't have a word for this particular concept, because then someone puts together five English words for it and you think, this is a concept I haven't met before, I'll have to come to understand it. I think it's more dangerous when you take a simple English word like mind and you use it to translate three Pali words and each of the Pali words has a different meaning and the way they all fit together is different, and you translate them all mind and then some of the things just don't make sense. So, yes.
Or the scholars, Pali scholars, who translate these things, and they argue about the words quite a lot. They say that person has translated it as this one. It doesn't convey the meaning of this one. And so the other person has translated this way. It doesn't convey the meaning of this one properly because this word has got this sort of thing. They are talking about the philosophical point of view, you know, that those are proponents of languages. And so I use this word. So I have seen. None of them actually convey the meaning.
And none of them did it to realize the...
Well, I mean, one got to translate, otherwise other people can't actually see. And if I read this, if I haven't read this one in English, I wouldn't say I would have understood this Dhamma to that sense. So having read it, then I understood that English translation is also not correct. There are certain issues. But those translators, the book that I have, has got, if you have if the text is this size, this size is the actual text, the rest is the footnote. They are writing in this one, this is the word, this is what I am actually translating. In that book, in the Sutta Pitaka, has got this meaning, so this is what it is. It's open. So they did not damage it, they actually left it at that one. So you have to think. And so single translations, for example, they left Pali word as it is because they can't translate it. So that means then you don't actually understand what it is. And certain things they actually did better job over there. So anyway, that the teaching is there. And if you really want to get the correct meaning, have a dictionary, Pali dictionary, read this one. If you read one para for 1 hour, it doesn't matter. Because then you understand that particular para, you are completely know what it is. Don't rush it. But there is something happening when you actually try to read as a beginner. You see something, oh, this is great. I want to get into the next one. It happened to me, that's what I'm saying. So I want to get into the next one. So you are actually skipping very fast certain things as well. But try not to do that. Try to grab the meaning thoroughly.
What I always think is it's good to hear different sutras. But it's always, the more is that... what you want to do is to understand certain things clearly that you can easily absorb the other things after that. It's no use of you reading about 100 different sutras if you don't understand one properly, because you don't gain anything from reading all these other 999.
What one thing happened is that, let's say I got this paragraph, I understood the meaning of to a certain that one, then I want to see in other discourses what Buddha said about the same thing. How did he actually express in different ways? So you are actually looking for that as well. So, I mean, it's depending on your characteristic. So, but reading and meditating in the morning always will take you there. I think we'll stop for today then. Yeah.